Sydney has just enacted its biggest planning change in decades, might even be in a century. The transport-oriented development plan is now in place in many suburbs across Sydney and will continue to be a big feature of our planning system for decades ahead. It is a huge change with 170,000 new dwellings coming to our capital city across key transport infrastructure locations over the next two decades. To put that into context, that is the size of all Canberrans being put in around key locations in Sydney. 37 train stations all across New South Wales specifically, but all around Sydney, we're going to see a lot more apartment buildings, and the nature of our city is going to change from this one policy change. It is absolutely massive. They've been thinking, planning, toing and froing about doing something like this for over a decade, and within 3 months, the state government has signed, sealed, and delivered. The housing affordability issues of today will unlikely be a major issue in 4 or 5 years' time when these dwellings finally come online. Kurt, how are you?
Yeah, excited to talk through this one. Your little summary of this to me, just in passing, was that as far as like changing development regulations and zoning regulations for transport, you reckon it's like the biggest change since the Sydney like got the car and we moved from horse and carts to like roads like 100 years ago. So I thought that was a good contextual description for just how big these changes are.
It's so enormous. You know, when we think of politics and we think of government, we think of reluctance for change. That's been a little bit of a theme in recent policy sort of metrics. And whenever you talk about development sort of stuff and you have councils, like individual locations, you have so much voice about it, so much disruption, protests, etc. This government has just gone and rezoned with one policy so many train stations that they'd been trying to rezone for years beforehand with, you know, individual plans here and there. They just went, nah, stuff all of that. Let's draw a circle around this train station. Everything apartments. Let's go. That's what they've done. Yeah. And this is the craziest thing. As of today, you know, the 1st of May, we're in May now. A bunch of these train stations can now accept planning permits to go and allow for, you know, 6 to 8 level apartments where there's currently only one house. Crazy.
Yeah. And typically, like you say, nothing normally happens with this. The normal process is someone is like, cool, we need to fit more dwellings in, you know, for the growth of the population. And everyone's like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, yeah. And then you go around to each of the councils and they're like, that does sound like a good idea, but, you know, not here, not here, not here. And then someone finds a land release, you know, 80 kilometers from the CBD and is like, there you go, there's a couple of thousand dwellings. Like, that's probably as good as we can do for now. Let's like revisit in 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. Look, for those that know me personally, they know that I lived in Torella growing up over the last few years. Torella is one of these train stations that has been Todd impacted and selected as one of the train stations that are going to change. Don't live there anymore, but that was a location where they had planned rezoning in 2016, 2017. They had framed it as, we want to rezone this place. When they said it out loud and put a public announcement about it, man, Rockdale Council was storming with people being like, I refuse this. This is horrible. I don't want this. Stuff this. You know, and it was loud. I went there. I'm like, I'm going to support this. This would be good for me. But I went there and it was just like shocking how many people were just there. Absolutely outraged, hatred. Like, they were like, do not do this. Now, this time around, the state has taken these planning powers away from councils and said, you know what? You guys have sucked at this. You really have. We're in the middle of a housing affordability crisis. The number one reason why, and we don't want to say it out loud everywhere, but the number one reason why is because councils continue to fail to deliver the housing supply that we need. They say we're doing a lot, but realistically, house prices are at this level because we don't have enough homes in this city. And now the state is coming out being like, stuff it. I'm taking away all of these powers. I'm doing no consultation. I don't want to listen to you. Just pretty much shut up and listen to me. This is happening. Get on board. And if you don't get on board, stuff it. I'm going to go accept it straight away. They've actually done that, especially in the northern parts of Sydney where one or two of the LGAs were just not unacceptable. They have gone of all the LGAs that they put in, the four up north have all just started on April.
Yeah.
Because the council was like, no, I don't want this. They've literally gone to the councils and said, stuff you. We're doing it anyway. It's a power move.
It is, so strong. Yeah. So that's a bit of the drama, I guess, behind it to unpack it. But let's run people through this, I guess, from a bit more of a strategic perspective.
Yep.
To go, all right, these changes have happened. I guess we can talk through what areas and what stations are impacted.
Yes.
But then I think it would be really useful for people to have a think through a bit of a feasibility and go, all right, what areas are actually and what types of assets are actually going to get the biggest benefit out of this? Because even if the changes might apply, say, equally across particular areas, it doesn't necessarily mean that when you do the feasibility that everything is going to come out the same, if that makes sense.
For sure, for sure. Let's put it this way. Some Sydney siders, some lucky Sydney siders have just doubled their property value overnight. That's how big this change is. These areas are particularly located in high-value locations where apartment values sell for more than $800,000 and particularly where apartment values sell for over $1 million. In situations like this, the land that one sits on has appreciated significantly because of the extent and size of this rezoning policy. So let me unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
I've been asked this from a number of people about why these areas and how have you come up with this math? So the specifics of this change is they've changed the floor to space ratio to 2.5 and the building height from whatever it is, single story, double story, just a single home, to allow for 6 to 8 level apartments, specifically 6 level apartments, but you can add on affordability housing provisions that came in place late last year and get a bonus on that, get a 30% bonus on that, which allows it to go to 8 levels. So you're turning an individual house that's there on 1,000 square meters, for example, to 2,500 square meters of floor space.
Yeah.
So that's 2.5 times whatever your land amount is. So each apartment in terms of floor space ratio, we've looked at a whole range of DAs, but just use 75 square meters. Call it 80 square meters for each apartment as a guide for what you can do for an average 2-bedroom apartment. You might even get a 3rd bedroom in that because, you know, balconies often, garages and other stairways and things like that are not considered in the floor space ratio, hallways and things like that. So it's actual like living space that you can live. So if you do the math on that, if you have a 1,000 square meter block, it's now 2,500 square meters in floor space ratio. You can get a 30% bonus on top of that. Call it 3,000 square meters.
Yep.
And then you divide that by 80, you're getting like, I'm struggling to the math on top of my head, but like, is that 40 apartments? Nearly 40 apartments, like between 35 apartments. So you have one house being transformed into 35 to 40 apartments. Now, if that house, let's say on 1,000 square meters, it costs $4 million today. If you are selling 35 apartments for over $1 million each, then the end value of your development is sitting at, call it $40 million for completing this development. It costs about $500,000 to build an apartment pretty much end to end. We've seen quite a few feasos from our developer clients, seen a few big apartment feasos as well from some QS reports and contacts in our industry. That's, you know, a rough sort of indicative guide. So if it costs you, if you're building 40 apartments, for example, and it costs you $500,000 to build them, it's going to cost you $20 million to build these apartments.
Yep.
But you're selling it for $40 million. That's a big spread. That's a $20 million profit for somebody. So they're going to work out, they're going to run their numbers and being like, oh, I can make $20 million on this.
Yep. Buy the site for $5 million,
if I own the land. Cool. If I buy the site for $5 million, then I've still got a $15 million profit here. Obviously, I've got to add in holding costs and things like that. Let's add a couple of million there.
Yep.
You typically want to make, you know, a 20% return on doing something like this, a bit more than that, ideally, call it 30%. You now can back of the envelope calc, what is the land actually worth? In this example, I'm just doing really, really quick math, $20 million to build everything, $40 million sale price, you know, add in some interest, add in some other expenses there, call it $5 million in other expenses there. You can back end the total cost that that developer will accept is, call it $32 million. So $40 million end value, the developer will accept a total cost of $32 million.
Yep.
It cost them $20 million there, so $12 million for all the other costs there. The land has to be incorporated in that.
Yeah.
Which now leaves your land value somewhere in that $0 to $12 million range. You've got interest, blah, blah, blah. You're going to get land values at around $7, $8, $9 million here when you run these, when you run this FISO. And in all of this, I've assumed a $1 million apartment price value.
Yeah.
In some of these locations, like, you know, Gordon is one of these locations. Gordon's a nice area on the railway line, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes to the city. Great spot, great schooling. People want to live there. You ain't buying an apartment for $1 million. You're not even getting close to an apartment. You're getting a one bedder, right? You're building a lot of 2-3 bedroom apartments there. So when you push that number up to 50 million or 60 million, the numbers are crazy. Some of these people sitting on these land allotments have doubled their land value overnight from this. So in some cases, they may have even tripled it. That's how big this change is. That's a contextual analysis for those that have asked me about how to work out these values. Whoever's buying this is running a feasibility to work out the value of the land, and they're doing it, doing a back-end spread, being like, how much does it cost me? What amount do I have left over for the land? That is my offer for the land. That's how they work it out.
Yeah, and I think I'm picking the key drivers, I guess, in that calculation, like hearing you run through that. It's really the gap between the build price and the sale, the apartment value at the end. Because for these sites, you can just kind of assume apartments are the way that they're going to be like developed.
Yep.
Like people aren't doing duplexes and like it's going to be apartments. So the build cost of apartments is might vary a little bit from area to area, but it's not really that different.
Yep.
So
$500,000,
I think. You're going to have your $500,000 essentially regardless of which area you do this project.
Exactly.
Yep. So the big difference is if you go through each of these areas, the sale prices of apartments in these areas can be very, very different. Like you say, if you're doing Gordon, if you're doing somewhere in like the inner east or, you know, the sale, the cost of an apartment, if you're selling it or buying it can be, you know, very, very different to other areas of Sydney.
Yep.
And where you're getting that big spread, the cost of building the apartment is relatively similar regardless of where you're doing it. But the sale price is markedly different. That's where you're going to see, okay, in terms of land values, these are the areas that are going to get the biggest uplift.
Exactly. Yeah. So the spread between the price of an apartment and the cost it builds to an apartment is where the biggest value drivers are going to be from this particular change. And that's why the more expensive premium areas are going to do really well because apartments cost more there. They're also going to change dramatically. My wife and I went for a drive out to one of these areas, across all of these stations actually, because they're all right next to each other, the four train stations. We went for a drive around, just took a look at these areas. They're beautiful, leafy places where people live, a lot of heritage homes there. A lot of the councils have just nominated the entire area as heritage conservation. And I think Todd, so this particular policy change, I think they allow heritage items to remain, but heritage conservation areas will not be included. So if you've circled the entire area as heritage conservation, Todd overrides that.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure about how that bit works. There's obviously mechanical factors to consider that are unclear at this point. Council still need to approve these DAs. It's going to take a lot of time for all of this to be built in. But the step one in allowing more dwellings has been ticked off by the state.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you say, it's going to not something that's going to happen instantly, but over maybe a 10-year window, like the face of a lot of these suburbs and the feel of a lot of these suburbs is going to change dramatically, which is the, you know, obviously it's, a lot of people are upset about that, that live there, but that is actually the intended outcome of these changes.
100%,
like that is what they're shooting for. Cause they're like, unless something
changes
dramatically, the new supply of housing is not going to come online and the rental housing affordability, both on prices and rents, is not going to resolve itself.
Yeah. I agree with that, yeah. I question the design. Is this the best way? I don't really know. It's kind of policy setting for the next 50 years done with a little bit of a gun to their head, I guess, in terms of the timing. There's so much emergency type policy settings being put in place, but planning generally isn't done in that way. I'm not so sure drawing circles around all these train stations, 400 meters off you go, is the right pathway. Perhaps there's a bit more nuance to it that should have been applied. Maybe you go higher as well. Like we operate in Mascot, our office is there. Everything is the same height, it's 14 levels. I don't like that so much. I kind of like Green Square a lot more, where you have 25 levels and then like it looks cool when it's like up, down, blah, 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 like versus they're all the same. You know, that's personal preference, but planners and town planners will have much better insights on that than us. But the uniformity of this policy is a little bit, like, you want all of these areas to look exactly the same, apartments to go through all of them, and the same exact height policy, et cetera, across everywhere. So that bit's a little bit interesting where it's just not very tailored. But at the same time, they've given councils the option of, hey, you want to come up with tailored plans? You do. You can do better, you can, but you must have the same amount of dwellings at the very least.
Yeah, yeah, which, like you say, it's a big step forward in terms of, you know, the potential to do things is now there, whereas, you know, previously it wasn't. And ideally it's not done in a, like a cookie cutter way that
it is the area.
I know, but like ideally the actual developments when they like come out aren't all looking the same and done in a way that people are like, oh, this is a bit boring. I actually don't really want to live here.
They've come up with a solution for this as well. At the end of the year, they're doing this thing called pattern book designs. So it's kind of like, the way I read this is it's like a brochure of six-level apartments. You can have this six-level apartment or this six-level apartment or this six-level apartment. Pick your design. If you want to pick any of these, DA approved. They're trying to speed it up. But when you think of it, like fast forward 20 years, being like, you're going to walk past all these beautiful
hopefully
all going to look the same.
Hopefully whoever did those designs, they like paid a lot of money and they look like smick and interesting because that's what people are going
to
be stuck with.
It's a bit like Paddington, right? Like you go to Paddington, they're all, the terraces are all beautiful, but they're all the same type of terrace everywhere, right? That's kind of the idea. They use it as an example. Paddington, Woollahra, all these inner
can work, but it can also look a bit boring as well. So like it depends, but
It is what it is. At least they're doing something.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. You know, we often say, you know, in previous episodes when we've talked about, you know, property investing, that at some point you just have to take action and kind of get the show moving.
Basically.
And yeah, they've done that to say the least.
Yeah, definitely. This is something that we talk a little bit about, fundamentals of property investing. So forget all the recent noise about following this trend and that trend and this data metric. Forget about all of that and just go back to old school property investing techniques. So a lot of older Australians will follow these principles because it's not dominated by TikTok and Instagram yet, is buy next to a train station, buy a nice wide plot, buy a good parcel of land and hold on to it for dear life. If you've done that, you may be a giant winner from this policy setting, being like, I told you so sort of moment from those sort of investors, because that's kind of what's won out.
Yeah.
The scarcity premium of being next to the railway is there. You know, there's only a certain block of land available around these railway stations. And these are the Todd impacted ones, but everything is being rezoned as well across the state, because there's another set of policies that are about to come out too, which is round two, which includes every train station and pockets around those train stations, where you can allow terraces, duplexes. It's changes everywhere across the board that are going to go in. It's not just apartments going up. They're allowing more and more apartments around shopping centers as well. That's all going to kick in June, July this year, whenever they actually action it. So this is just phase one, adding in Canberra into Sydney somehow over the next two decades. And then phase two is, you know, let's add in Perth. Be like, cool, let's just fit in our next two, 3 decades of population growth all in one go. Let's just allow it to happen and let the free market go and deliver it.
Kind of, yeah. It's a very courageous move by government, I would say. Like you say, it's one of the biggest changes. And, you know, you might not see developments, you know, spades in the ground, so to speak, for, you know, a year or 2 years or something like that. But the effects of this decision or these planning changes are going to, you know, basically be the face and the housing of Sydney for the next, you know, 50, 100 years.
Yeah, definitely. There's some specifics as well I'll just quickly touch on. So initially in December, when they first announced this, they said a 3-to-1 FSR. That's been watered down to 2.5-to-1 FSR. That's based on consultations. All the councils were like, hey, look, we can't actually build six-level apartments with 3-to-1 FSRs. You've got your numbers wrong there. So they've dialed it down to 2.5-to-1. They've added some affordable housing provisions. There was no minimum lot width, but now they put a 21-meter minimum lot width. So wide dwellings, corner dwellings, or amalgamated dwellings, you know, side by side. Yep. Dwellings have done really, really well. It all goes back down to something that we've been talking about a lot. It's basic property investing strategy that I've always talked about, is play property investing a little bit like Monopoly, buy side by side, buy next to the railway station, which is exactly how a Monopoly board looks. There's a railway station, there's side by side houses next to it. If you buy side by side, you can put in more dwelling density, and then off you go, you put in a tower. It's literally Monopoly 101 in terms of New South Wales planning. That's kind of how they've done it, being like, hey, it's funny because I played this over the weekend with my daughter for the first time, and I was quickly telling her this and be like, this is how New South Wales state has gone through the planning process in Australia.
Yeah. I reckon that's a good spot to wrap it up.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it on the transport-oriented development plan. Some of the biggest changes in Sydney now kicking in across many locations. You can jump on the New South Wales Planning website to know a little bit more. Or if you want to ask us about it, you know, drop us an email or give us a phone call, and we'll be more than happy to talk to you about how these planning changes impact you.